MMA Roadshow, episode number 252. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee is not with me. We'll get into that a little bit later because there's some news about Cole Coffee. We definitely got to catch up on that. But we won't get into all that yet. Right now, we'll get to the man that is here with me. I am in Los Angeles, California right now in the shadows of beautiful LAX Airport. It's scenic. And the man, Ant Walker, at Ant Walker MMA, has joined me, formerly of SureDog.com, now of My MMA News. Thank you for stopping by. This, I know it's not a long trip for you, but nevertheless, I appreciate you making the effort and coming to the scenic abode here with the beautiful skyline of LAX over there.
Well, I will say that your characterization of the skyline of LAX is quite hyperbolic. LAX is a hellhole. But I hope your description of me wasn't hyperbolic.
No.
John, thanks so much for having me. Always a pleasure talking to you, my man.
For sure, man. For sure. I'm glad you can make it. Listen, the LA area, you're right about it. I've said it before. I don't necessarily love LA. I will say this, the convenience of it right here. So we're here, of course, or at least I am. You live here. I'm here for Bellator 238, Bud versus Cyborg. It's at the Fabulous Forum. We'll just call it the Forum. I don't know how fabulous it is. It is a cool venue.
Yeah, it's a dope fight venue.
It is a good venue. It's just the area around it is not so wonderful. Although it's going to be. The new stadium right there is next to it. I'm sure there's going to be millions poured into
that. Yeah, a lot of changes going around. So get in on that real estate while you can.
If you can buy some Inglewood.
Yeah, buy a property while you can, man.
Well, so what I say is, you know, Bellator does Inglewood a lot. And it is convenient because it's a short flight from Vegas, obviously, right here. The airport's right here. The hotel's right here. The Forum's right here. It's convenient, right? It's all right here together. It's quick in and out. But you really don't get that feel. And listen, L.A. traffic is awful. It's terrible. It's awful. And I don't know how people deal with it. But it's a pretty cool town in terms of, like, food and culture and getting around, places to go hang out. And we just don't really get to do that when it's Bellator week because, unfortunately, we're right here in the shadows of LAX.
Yeah, everything at Bellator, every time they come to the Forum, they just stay within this probably like 5 square mile radius, and it except for the occasional trip to the Hollywood headquarters of Viacom, you get that a little bit, but I don't know, it just doesn't have the same feel as like a UFC card at the Staples Center, where you are in the middle of downtown LA and you really get a vibe for the city. But I will say the Forum is a better fight venue, so I do appreciate
it. It is a better fight venue than Staples. You're right about that. Like, it's been redone. Obviously, it's an old venue, but it's nice now. And you're right, man. It's just something about the size and the seating. It's perfect.
Right. It makes even some events that otherwise shouldn't be that big of a deal feel bigger.
Yeah.
You know, I think you were there for the Chuck Tito 3.
Yep.
Yeah, and in the Forum, and it felt like an actual big event for a little while.
Yep.
You know, and Bellator isn't going to sell the same amount of tickets as the UFC in a lot of times, so it's probably better for them to not put that sort of pressure on themselves to go in the Staples Center, which I'm sure costs more to rent out.
Oh, I'm sure.
Right, and more pressure to sell tickets and fill the venue when you can go to the Forum and have like an authentic feel, and it just has – that building has a lot of history in sports.
Does.
The Showtime Lakers – were there, and a lot of really cool things happened. So I know, of course, you've seen this a million times, and anybody who's been backstage at the Forum has seen this a million times, the history on the walls.
That's pretty cool.
You walk all the great artists have done concerts there, all the great sports things that have happened there, all the great boxing that's happened in that building. It's all memorialized in the walls there. So Bellator they're doing the right thing by going to the Forum, but if you came to Bellator Fight Week for the L.A. vibe, sorry, fam.
Yeah. All right. So two things let me point out. First of all, I just straight up lied. I was not at Chuck and Tito 3. And I realized that I was part of the documentary, so I felt like I was there, right? In my head, I'm like, yeah, Chuck Tito 3, man. Yeah. I was like, no, I wasn't there. I think it was like around Thanksgiving or something like that.
Yeah.
So Ken Hathaway came down here by himself and covered that. But yeah, it's funny. In my head, I'm like, yeah, I was here. And then as we're talking, I'm like, no, I wasn't here. So I'll just get that out on the record before anybody calls me out on it. But second, I will say too, we're talking very first world problems and media problems, by the way. I should not shit on Bellator. And by the way, we're going to get into the card just shortly because I like this card a lot, man. I think there's some really interesting matchups there. I'm literally just talking from the media perspective of, like, I'm just sitting in this hotel and all I ever get to see is LAX Airport. But to the fan, that won't matter. So I should probably stop complaining about that. All right, I want to get into Bellator and the UFC both because we've got dual events this week. Matt Erickson is out there in North Carolina for the UFC. But before we do, got to talk a little bit more about Conor McGregor. It's 1 week later, but I mean, I do still feel like, yes, it's settling down a little bit, but everybody is still talking about that. And I think more importantly, everybody's still wondering kind of what the next step is. And so I'm kind of wondering for you, man. I respect your opinion. I like the way you know, you sit back and analyze things. Look, sometimes I'm so close to the grind and day in and day out that I don't get a chance to really sit back and think about it a little bit. So I respect your opinion a lot. And I want to know a week later kind of where you're feeling, like, A, what you take from it now versus maybe what you took from it that night, like where it's living in your head in retrospect. Because I feel as we get further away from it, I feel like a lot of people are less enamored with how amazing Conor did, and they're more focused on how bad Cowboy did. At least that seems to be some of the opinions that I'm seeing now. And then also just if you feel like you have a better understanding of where we go next, because, man, the more I talk about the scenarios and what's out there, there's a lot of options on the table. I mean, a lot of options on the table, but the timing, it's all about timing. It's all about, you know, when, what, where, what piece fits where. And I don't know if I feel any clearer about where I think we're going
to
be.
You know, I think that was the point of it all, to not be clear as to what the next step is. You know, if Conor went out there and did not perform the way he did, if he ended up in the L column once again, you're down to just very few options. Then you start questioning, well, how viable is Conor McGregor as a high-level mixed martial artist at this point?
Right.
Then it raises up more questions about his legal problems. It raises up more questions about his conduct in the past several years.
Where's his head at?
Right. What directions his life has taken him to where he's fallen off as a mixed martial artist. So you're starting to open up a lot of doors that you'd rather keep closed. By him winning and winning the way he did, now it just opens up the book. Now, we didn't learn a whole lot about Conor McGregor from that performance, because I think most of us in that bubble would have said, yeah, Conor probably knocks out Cerrone. Maybe not as emphatically as he did.
Not
when
40
he did.
Seconds.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. I gave it the first round and a half, I thought.
That's what I think a lot of people thought. Round and a half, two rounds.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's a reasonable point of view to take. But when he goes out there and demolishes him and doesn't really show much, I mean, other than a mean shoulder bump, you have to then wonder what's next, and it just adds this air of mystery that we haven't had around Conor since like 2015.
Yeah, it's crazy. All right, so let me ask you this. Okay, we know that we've got Tony Ferguson, Khabib Nurmagomedov coming up, a fight that we've wanted forever, a fight that's been booked over and over. Now, the first time I heard this, it was crazy. We started doing this thing, if people haven't seen it, it's called the Spinning Back Click. We do it every week on MMA Junkie Now. Myself, the guys from MMA Junkie Radio, Gorgeous George and Goes, we get together. And we just have a quick 10-15 minute run through a bunch of topics. And we started talking about this. And George Garcia, Gorgeous George, came out and said, I think they should consider paying Tony Ferguson to step aside and make this rematch. And then I believe it was Colin Cowherd came out and said the same thing. I thought George was crazy. I thought he was the only person on the planet saying it. Now, I'm not going to necessarily say that Colin Cowherd backing up that opinion means that he's not crazy.
And Skip Bayless said it too.
It was Skip Bayless. Not Colin Cowherd. You're absolutely right.
Whose opinion we just
There you go, right? So I saw that, and I just want to put my hand in the air right now and slap somebody upside the head for saying that, man. No, absolutely. You know, like, first of all, I don't think Tony Ferguson would even be – like, he's been through so much hell to even get to this point. I don't think Tony Ferguson would accept that. But I think even – and I'm not trying to disrespect my man, Gorgeous George, but I think even entertaining that is, like, crazy. It's impossible.
It's sacrilege. And, you know, and all respect to George. George is the homie. He's a cool guy.
OG.
Definitely much respect and love for that dude. But come on, fam.
Yeah. Can't do that.
Come on, George.
Can't do that.
We know better than that.
All right, so here's the other thing, too, that's interesting about that. So, it was funny. The press conference, Dana saying, oh, man, Khabib, Conor 2 is the fight to make. And, I started talking to some people, Submission Radio Boys afterwards, our own little recap show that we did. And I said, I do agree that that would be massive business. I think that that would be a huge show. Now, understanding that there's still a fight to happen. We're just talking about if Khabib is to win. I think a lot of people are reading too much into that and kind of slating Dana a little too much by saying, well, don't you realize he's got to fight Tony Ferguson? No, we realize that. But here's my other thing. If Khabib can win, which I am looking very, very forward to that fight, knock on wood, it doesn't fall apart again.
Let me join you in that.
Here's the thing is I do agree, massive money, massive, massive money, man. Global appeal. I've been fortunate enough to travel the world and see the type of appeal there is in these other markets. But I do wonder, making that fight right away, as you said, we didn't learn a whole lot in that 40 seconds. But I understand this is the reborn Conor McGregor, the refocused Conor McGregor, everything. And I do believe that, man. He looked great. He acted great, all those things. But I don't know if he beats Khabib Nurmagomedov, even as this reinvented version of himself. And so I wonder, you know, putting that fight together right away would be big money. But it's one fight, and now you're back to where you were before, right? So is it too soon? I mean, to do that seems like maybe other options.
I fully agree with you. And let me just digress a little bit by saying that this new and improved, like reinvigorated Conor McGregor,
right,
we haven't seen the likes of this since C-level Kane. just had to get that out there. But I think when you go with
– Motivated BJ Penn.
Oh, yeah, motivated BJ Penn, BJ. Man. Yeah, if you or TRT Vitor,
wow,
another
wow,
one. Yeah, another one right there. Uberim, horse meat,
yeah, horse meat.
The thing is, if you go immediately to the Conor versus Khabib rematch, you just take so many pieces off the table,
yes,
that make that table so appealing in the first place.
Yes.
So, like what I was saying, tying it back to what I was saying earlier. Now, if Conor lost, then the only really big fight for him that makes any sense would be that Nate Diaz trilogy, which they always have in the back pocket. But with him winning, well, then let's say he legitimately is going to chase the lightweight title instead of it, a title shot being provided to him.
Right.
Then you got Justin Gaethje right there. Who doesn't want to see that fight? And now the BMF thing, which I hope the BMF thing kind of dies off. We don't need any more fake belts. But if he fights Jorge Masvidal, what a big fight that would be. Right, or if he decides to, a fight against Masvidal would serve this purpose, but if he were to legitimately chase welterweight title contendership, if you put him up against Khabib and the same thing happens that happened in UFC 229, you just wipe away so much intrigue.
You take a lot of options on the table. Now, you said it, and I've used that exact terminology, Diaz in the back pocket. That one's always there, right? So I do believe that one would still be on the table, but I'm starting to wonder. It didn't even cross my mind at first, because to me, they're going to fight the next time Conor loses.
Exactly.
The next time Conor loses. And that may be a weird way to look at it, but you said it's always there. It doesn't matter. And I've said it a million times. Those guys could lose five fights in a row apiece, and you book that fight. It's a pay-per-view headliner. It makes mad money. So I didn't even think about it originally, but now I'm starting to wonder if it is the time to do that one right now, if maybe you could slip that one in right now, because you still need to figure out what's happening at lightweight. And as you said, maybe you can keep him progressing towards that lightweight belt. I'm not sure. And then the thing that's really blowing my mind is where does Justin Gaethje fit in, man? That guy is too damn good and too damn exciting to be on the outside looking in right now. But to be honest, I can't figure out exactly where he fits, because if all the pieces were on the table and there was nothing announced or anything, I think I'd like the Masvidal fight right now. I think that's the one I feel like the most fan sentiment right now. Conor and Masvidal would be big. I mean, the personalities, the star power. Man, you see, I mean, man, what happened with the BMF title? I know, you know, again, I'm with you. Let's not keep creating belts. But the damn president showed up to it. The Rock is there. I mean, right, it was a big event. So those two personalities meeting, man, I think would be big. But it just seems like the UFC is like adamantly opposed to it, and honestly, it doesn't even seem like Conor wants it. Which I'll be honest, it's a little head scratching to me, man. Because to me, I think out of Khabib, Tony Ferguson, Justin Gaethje, Masvidal, Usman, Diaz, I think that's probably about the most logical items right there. I think Masvidal is the most appealing out of all of them.
I think so. I think style wise, it's the most favorable one. Although, for the record, I would pick Masvidal in that if I gun to my head and I had to pick right now.
I probably would.
But style-wise, that seems like the most favorable matchup for him. You know there's going to be bigger money in that than a Usman fight. I would say even right now, probably even bigger money than the Diaz trilogy.
Yeah.
If it were to happen right at this moment.
I think so. I'm just surprised that they don't seem more excited about it. So, I think you said a great thing early on with saying, I think the point was for people not to know. Because you're right. Because Conor, if he wants something, he says it right away.
Right.
I mean, he always has a message. He always has a plan. And it's not just, you know, throwing out there just for sake. You know, he knows exactly where he's going, exactly what he wants. So I do think the fact that he kind of came in and said, I don't know, we'll sit back and we'll wait, I think he wants to create that. I will say the one thing I do not want to see this. I do not want to see him box. I don't care if it's Mayweather. I don't care if it's Pacquiao.
No.
I don't care if it's Terrence Crawford or whatever, whoever's being thrown
out
there now.
It's Terrence Crawford.
I do not want to see it.
Man, like, yeah, just I'm so sick of the boxing MMA talk. I'm so sick of it.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing is, as much as I say that, my dumb ass will be right there.
That's the thing is, okay, that's it. Like Mayweather McGregor, I mean, I'll remember that for the rest of my life. You know what I mean? That was a spectacle. It was crazy, man, to see it. And if something like that happened again, it would be similarly
a
spectacle.
That was lightning in a bottle.
Two things. It was lightning in a bottle. You're right. I don't know if you can go back and make that. And the other thing was, to me, it was never competitive. It was never going to be competitive. And that's why I'm tired of it. I mean, you're right, and that's probably what made it lightning in a bottle. The fact that these two huge stars were able to put a fight together. We all said, I mean, I remember when the rumors first came out, and I was doing interviews going, this is never going to happen. I don't even know why we're talking about it. And then it happens. I'm like, well, I don't know anything about the sport anymore, you know? but it was never going to be a competitive fight, just as, I mean, there's a reason Floyd Mayweather doesn't step into MMA. I mean, any boxer coming to MMA is going to get mauled. There's no question about that. They're not going to be able to stop leg kicks and takedowns. But the other way around, I mean, when you go fight a professional boxer in a professional boxing match, you're going to lose.
Yeah. You learn how little you know about boxing.
That's it. It's just not exciting to me. That's why I don't see it happen. I don't want to lose. If this is prime Conor, if this is reinvigorated Conor, and we're only going to get a short win, I mean, this dude's not going to fight for 10 years. You know what I mean? Like, right. Let's make the fights count.
Right, big time. And then when you start talking about some of those other names, a Crawford or Pacquiao, we start getting ridiculous as far as what we can expect Conor to look like when it's all over with.
Right.
It's one thing to step in against Floyd, a guy whose style is predicated mostly on defense, a guy who isn't known to have knockout power, and a guy who's gonna play around to make all the money he can at the gambling table when he's betting on his own fight. Not when you have killers like Crawford or a guy like Pacquiao or a guy like Canelo who just their sole objective is to decapitate you.
Yep.
You know, now you're looking at ruining someone who has a viable career for the next, you know, for the foreseeable future in mixed martial arts off of one boxing match that, you know, granted, he had no chance of winning in the first place.
And look, I get it. Pacquiao's a name. Crawford, I love Crawford, man. That dude is, if people haven't seen him fight.
Oh, he's a beast.
He's an absolute beast. But that's kind of the point, is you have to say, if you haven't seen him fight.
Because
you know what? There's probably a lot of MMA fans that haven't seen him fight. So that's not even logical. I just don't want to see him box.
Let's stop even bringing energy to this, man.
I'm down. All right. So let's talk about it. I mean, look, I had to talk about it. You know, Conor McGregor is still kind of dominating the headlines. And I will say this. You know, the UFC and Bellator are both holding events this weekend. I think it's hard for both of them to promote, man, this quick afterwards. Now, luckily, you know, neither one's a pay-per-view. It's not like you're being asked to shell out money again. But in terms of for Bellator, number one, selling tickets here is probably not easy because I guarantee you, if you're a hardcore MMA fan and you live in LA, you probably tried to get yourself to Vegas to at least go soak in the atmosphere, if not to actually go to the fight itself. So, got to be tough to sell tickets here. But even, you know, I mean, the UFC out in Raleigh, I mean, they're getting ready for a card, but I don't feel like there's any like big push behind it.
Zero buzz behind it. Like, it actually took me a second to sit there and think about what the main event was.
Yeah.
And for, you know, JDS versus Curtis Blaydes, I mean, that's an excellent fight.
It's just tough on the calendar, man. I mean, that quick behind it, and it's just hard. The UFC only has so many people and on so much staff, and fans only have so much attention. It's hard, man, to go immediately after the week after a Conor McGregor fight. It's the only bad thing about doing an event that big is it's kind of tough to follow it up.
Yeah, it's like that that kind of it's like a hangover almost. Maybe that event is like a little bit biting the dog back, but at the end of the day, you don't feel the best. You know, you don't feel as good as you did the night before. So
that's it. All right, let's talk a little bit about Bellator 238, the reason I'm out here. Julia Budd versus Chris Cyborg. Chris Cyborg making her Bellator debut. It's funny. Chris Cyborg and Scott Coker. It's weird. It almost doesn't feel like a debut, you know what I mean, because they're coming back together again, but it is a debut in the promotion. And I got to say, I was really happy when Chris Cyborg came to the UFC. I was. I just felt like she was too good of a talent to never step into the UFC. You know, you hate the Fedor Emelianenkos of the world who you're like, oh, man, they were so great, but we never got there. And there's not a ton of those names out there, but, you know, Chris Cyborg, to me, definitely would have been one of those. And I was super excited when she came to the UFC, but I will admit, I think I like her better here in Bellator, man. I think Bellator has actually spent some time developing this division. It's an actual division,
yes.
You know, whereas the UFC, I still don't understand how committed they were to it. And Scott Coker, who never talks trash about anybody today, still didn't talk trash today, but he came out and said, like, look, I don't think they ever even were committed to developing the division. They just wanted to be in the Chris Cyborg business, and that's all they did. And hard to argue with that. That's pretty much all they did. So here, Chris Cyborg has an actual home where there's opponents up and down that you can actually fight. Plus, you have the option of, and I know we just got through saying we're not going to talk about boxing, but she's a little bit different. She's kind of one of those special fighters that, you know, she's done this and accomplished that, and she's in the kind of, I don't want to say the twilight of her career, but, you know, she wants to
do something. It's like
rarefied air. It is. It's rare. Yeah. This is one of those that you do want to see. Like, I do want to see her definitely go fight in Japan in a ring in some kind of freak show matchup against somebody like 250 pounds or whatever. You know what I mean? I want to see that. I want to see her box. I want to see this fight, man. This is a great fight. So I got to say, I think I'm happy that Chris Cyborg left. And, you know, talking to her today, she seems super happy, man, like in a way that she hasn't in a long time. There's no chip on her shoulder, man. She always had that little bit of edge to her that even when she was excited for a fight, you could still tell she was pissed off at Dana about something.
Right. And I think for her, for Dana, for the UFC, for Bellator, for all parties involved, this is the best thing. The relationship between Chris Cyborg and Dana White got so toxic. It just got so ridiculous toward the end that you just have to wonder, like, is it worth it anymore?
That's it.
Especially when you looked at what the UFC was providing in terms of opponents for Cyborg or a division for her. And aside from a rematch with Amanda Nunes, what was there? You know, maybe Megan Anderson. Yeah. But do we really need to see that after what's happened with Megan,
no,
you know, as of late?
Not right now.
We're not. Yeah, exactly. Not right now. Like, do we want to wait around for the right person to come along? Or can Cyborg just be put in fights that are meaningful for her, you know, right now? And she can make a decent amount of coin. She's one of the few fighters who has the ability to make sponsorship money,
yep,
significant sponsorship,
yep,
money under Bellator that, you know, that she would not be getting with the UFC in the Reebok deal. So this makes sense for all parties involved. And like you said, the UFC never showed real commitment to a female featherweight division. They showed semi-commitment to the Chris Cyborg business.
That's it. Listen, I'm pulling up the odds. I'm not a wagering man. Not that I have anything against betting, but I've just always said when I put money on fights, I do not look at them objectively anymore because my money is tied up in there, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, I am cheering for my money. But I wanted to kind of see what the odds were. Chris Cyborg, minus 440 is what I'm looking at right now with Julia Budd coming back at plus 350. That, I guess it doesn't surprise me because I think Julia Budd is probably an unknown commodity to a lot of people. Chris Cyborg has been around, and yes, she had the big loss, the devastating loss that cut into her aura, but she's a superstar that people have been seeing maul, you know, other fighters on a big stage for a long time. I understand, I think, the line from and I think it's always important when you're talking about a line to remember, you know, the sports book is trying to get action both ways, right? I mean, that's what it's about. But if that was like, hey, is this what you agree in terms of competitiveness or how much there is of a chance to win, I look at this a lot differently. I don't know if I'd say pick him. I did end up picking Chris Cyborg in this fight, and I think a lot of us did on the staff, but to me – man, and seeing Julia Budd, I haven't seen a lot of her fights in person, but seeing her today and standing next to her, man, she is big and strong, and I've seen it on tape, but seeing her and realizing that she's bigger than Cyborg, you know, and I don't know if she'll be, you know, quite as quick or quite as explosive, you know, she might have to be a little bit more tactical about it, but I think Julia Budd's a live underdog here.
Yeah, I'd give her live dog status simply because of the size differential. And that's something that Chris Cyborg has very, very rarely, if ever, faced.
Right.
But
at least an athletic big person, right?
Right, you know? Right, exactly. But the way they fight, I just don't see Julia Budd coming away with this. I'm not too mad at the odds. Maybe I'd make it a little closer.
Yeah.
A little bit closer.
Yeah.
Now, but Cyborg is – I think it depends on what sort of Cyborg we see. Now, I am definitely of the school of thought that if you were to put Chris Cyborg against Amanda Nunes today, the result might be a little different. Not necessarily that Nunes would lose or whatnot, but it wouldn't happen that emphatically. It wouldn't happen that fast.
Right.
I think what we saw from Cyborg at UFC 232 was more of a – kind of rushing, like it was pre Jason Perillo Cyborg, in my opinion.
It was.
Now you take the patient and kind of disciplined striker that Cyborg has evolved into under his tutelage, that's a very tough puzzle for Julia Budd to crack.
Yep.
If Cyborg goes in there trying to bully her like she attempted to do with Amanda, like she was able to do pre-Perillo with, you know, a who's who in Strikeforce, then I think Budd's chances get a little better, because you see that over-aggression. Budd goes in for that takedown. She gets her down and ground and pounds her out. That's a possibility. But
I think maybe that newness Cyborg is living in my head right now.
Right.
You know?
And then, but you look at what she did against Felicia Spencer. And Felicia Spencer, kind of similar style to Julia Budd in the way that she uses her grappling. Spencer had a difficult time dealing with it. Like, mm-hmm. when she couldn't get the fight to the floor, she got pieced up. And however crazy biased that commentary was for Spencer during that fight, the truth was Spencer was getting whooped up on. And that's because she couldn't take the fight where she wanted it to go. And not like she didn't have the strength to do it, just Cyborg. We forget Cyborg is an excellent grappler.
Yep, she is. I tell you what, I'm excited by the fight. It is meaningful. And listen, I mean, in our women's featherweight rankings at MMA Junkie, this is number two versus number three in the world. So, I mean, this is a big, meaningful fight. I understand it's not a division that maybe as deep as some of the others, but that, you know, Bellator has done a good job of cultivating a division. And I threw it out there today, and I threw it out to Coker, and I threw it out to Budd and Cyborg as well, and none of them really bid on it, but I don't know, man. I kind of have this feeling that, like, this belt at women's 145 pounds means more almost. I mean, I'm not trying to take away from Amanda Nunes. Like, Amanda Nunes is the women's GOAT. I'm not trying to say that. But she fought one time there and will never fight there again, probably. I mean, right. I she's still carrying the old belt around, man. She hasn't even had a chance to get the new belt because she's still got the old one. You know what
I mean?
Yes. So I almost feel like this belt, at least in this category, it's more meaningful in some ways, I think. Now, that may be crazy talk. I mean, we've got a couple frosty beverages flowing a little bit. Maybe I'm getting crazy, but I think this one might mean more.
You're not crazy. The thing is, I think maybe saying that is a little premature because we're so close to when Amanda won that belt.
Right.
We're what, a year?
Yeah, about
so
a year
removed,
and a month.
Yeah, a year and a month removed from it. So maybe it's a little premature, but by this time next year, that is absolutely true.
If she hasn't fought again, right?
If there's no movement in the so-called women's featherweight division in the UFC, that sounds about right, because at some point, a lineal legacy or whatever has to mean little if you don't do anything
right,
with it.
Right, if it's just sitting there and you're not doing anything.
Because as of right now, you have to look at what Nunes knocking out Cyborg, and I hate to get too deep into the lineal talk, but you're talking the Strikeforce belt, you're talking Invicta belt as well, like unifying those titles
That's
with
true.
The UFC, and that means a lot
That's
so
true.
Close to it. Now, a year from now, and Scott Coker is continuing to foster an actual division, and Julie Budd already has, what, three defenses under her belt? That means that's going to mean more in the future.
That's a good point. All right, listen, well, I had a couple minutes to catch up with Cyborg. I kept it brief with her because Dave Doyle had also spoken with her for a feature that's on MMA Junkie and a print piece in USA Today as well. But I did have a couple minutes to talk about it, and here's what Cyborg had to say.
Cyborg, obviously you fought in all the biggest organizations in the world, but I wonder, that first fight, you know, when you're stepping into a new home, what's the feel like? Are there any nerves or excitement or, you know, kind of a feeling of the unknown?
Young. I feel young. I feel motivated. I feel happy, you know, for new chapter in my career. Excited to have this fight.
Very nice. You and Julia have been close to each other, right? I mean, Strikeforce, Invicta, you've been under the same banner before. So, you know, was this a fight that you thought about, that gave energy to, thought that, hey, we're definitely going to fight at some point?
I knew we were gonna fight one day together, you know. She's 145 pound, I am. But we get different ways, and now we meet to chat Saturday.
Nice. You stepping in right away and challenging for the belt. I wonder, in some ways, this belt might mean more than the UFC belt because they have so many women here and more of a division. Do you feel like it's possible that this belt means more than the UFC belt?
I think no belt means a lot for me. Like, for me, I just feel thankful having a belt around me. You know, I have to use this for this platform, be where I'm at, for share my faith and touch people's hearts and do what I love to do. You know, if this belt's important for touching people's hearts, I'm going to hold the hem for a long time.
Yeah. You know, it was about a year ago you had the loss. You handled yourself with class, with dignity. I wonder, though, did it change you as your approach to training, your approach to fighting? Did that loss change anything within you?
You know, that I feel in my heart we speak serious for you. That loss is God's gift. Because if it not happen, I was not here now. And I mean, now so happy this new chapter, new era for me. You know, if it don't happen, I was not in Bellator. If it don't happen, I'm not signed with Scott. I'll have to stay unhappy in the struggle every day. And then now I'm happy here, you know. I don't have any problem. I just have folks in my training, fighting, environment, people around me, you know, don't want to damage my brand. They want to grow in together. And it just make me really motivate.
Did the struggles that you have, like, affect you on a daily basis? I mean, did it cause you to have like a lack of motivation to train, a lack of motivation to keep doing what you do?
You know, I think it makes strong my faith. This has helped me. Maybe thank you, Dana. You know, thank you, people challenge you all the time and make me better person, strong, make me strong.
Yeah. I wonder, you know, you came back and got a win. Some people said, oh, it wasn't the most exciting win. It wasn't Cyborg. Do you feel like there's anything to prove here to show like, oh, I'm still that Cyborg?
You know, maybe you back that fight. Put sound down, no listen, because Joe Rogan announced that fight. He's commentator. He's the best friend Dana White. That fight, amazing fight. Felicia, great opponent. And I'm just excited now to fight Julia Budd.
Yeah. Great thing about being in Bellator, there's options, right? Maybe you can box, maybe you can go to Japan, maybe you can do all kinds of things. What's on the table for you? I mean, what do you want to accomplish while you're here?
You know, I'm happy that Bellator signed you because I can do another things, you know? I opened the opportunity for me on other things, and I don't know. I just fuck Saturday. After this, I like to live the present.
Nice. Well, on Saturday is a big fight. How do you see this thing going with two fantastic strikers, two very strong women? I mean, do you feel like this is going to be a very explosive fight? Is it going to be tactical? What are we going to see here?
Good question. You know, I'm thinking what I'm going to do. You know, I feel ready. You know, I feel very complete athlete. You know, my team amazing. I just ready to go, very blessed. And I'm going to do what I'm going to do. I like to fight and leave the consequence in God's hands.
All right, that was Chris Cyborg. I thought it was funny, man. She pointed out exactly what you said, the commentary, how biased it was. She said, make sure you watch it with the volume down if you want to talk about my last fight. But listen, it's a good fight. I'm excited about it. I really am. And I think this, again, tops off a good card. Should say, by the way, if you like what you're hearing, make sure if you're logged into iTunes or wherever you hear this wonderful MMA Roadshow, wherever you get your podcast, make sure you log in, make sure you subscribe, leave us a positive review, leave us some feedback, man. That always helps. And if you want to kick it up to that next level, go to patreon.com/the MMA Roadshow. We would appreciate your financial support. It helps us out a little bit. And trying to get the Patreon community a little bit more involved moving forward. It's been a small thing on the side, but I'm going to try to grow that bad boy a little bit so we have a little community. I'm tired of Twitter. I'm tired of Instagram. I want our community, man. I'm tired of this crappy social media.
And you know what? Before we continue, I just have to do something because we did talk a little retrospective in the last week. And I don't think there wasn't an episode after 246.
Correct.
Right. So can I say and a half?
You can. All right. I wanted to get to the and a half, but I couldn't because I had to work the next morning and but I hate coming on here and apologizing because it just sounds like I'm a loser. So anyway, but we'll get to those. All right, listen, just as intriguing to me, featherweight Grand Prix quarterfinal, Adam Borix versus Darian Caldwell. I'm really intrigued by this because to me, first of all, this Grand Prix, man, they loaded it with talent, and now the matchups are starting to come together. Adam Borix, the undefeated Hungarian kid who's just explosive as hell, has knockout power, creativity, has picked up some incredible wins against Darian Caldwell, the ex-bantamweight champion who suffered a pair of losses to Horiguchi, but Horiguchi's a monster, man. You can't shame him too much for that. Moving up to 145 says he feels a hell of a lot better in that category. So it's, you know, the up-and-coming prospect versus the former champ. It's the guy that's going to come out looking to try to do crazy, you know, wild striking versus the guy that's going to try to control you with wrestling. And I'm intrigued by this one. And the other thing that I'm really intrigued by, and I hate to say this because it's not that I'm necessarily tipping my hand, but AJ McKee gets the winner of this fight. And I mean, I like the idea of AJ McKee versus Darian Caldwell. I mean, because again, that's similar matchup, right? The up-and-coming talent versus the former champ proving and all that. But I will say the idea of two undefeated young cats going into the semifinal intrigues the hell out of me if Borix is able to get by him. But overall, man, I think this is just an intriguing fight to me.
I'm loving this fight. I really, really love this fight. Adam Borix is somebody that I think we should be talking about a lot more. You know, with absolutely no disrespect to AJ McKee, who deserves every bit of attention he's gotten and has proven himself every test that they give him. Adam Borges is pretty much doing the same damn thing right now.
5-0 in Bellator with 5 finishes.
2 of those being flying knees. And you know, and that's what I find really intriguing about this against Darian Caldwell. Darian is a guy who he's very clearly going to try to take you down. You know exactly what he's going to do. And, you know, correct me if I'm wrong on the X's and O's here, because I haven't quite done a deep dive on exact technique for this fight. But I don't recall Caldwell having a huge variety of setups for his takedowns.
Not particularly.
And if Borix knows how he's coming in,
it'll be dangerous.
I'm sorry, man. That is very, very, very dangerous territory to go into head first.
I'm telling you, I like both these guys, but I feel like I said, just where they are in their careers, man, I find this so intriguing again with their styles as well. So that's a big matchup in the Grand Prix quarterfinal. And again, the winner is going to go against AJ McKee. That side of the bracket's already set up. A couple other things on this main card, and I'm telling you, I really, really do like this card. Juan Archuleta versus Henry Corrales, two dangerous fighters, both of whom were eliminated from the Grand Prix, but are, you know, were in good fights against tough competitors, and this will be, I think, a good fight. Archuleta, by the way, at the media day was impressive. Rolled in wearing a suit but no shirt, just the jacket.
That's a fashionable dude, ain't it?
That's a fashionable dude, man. He is, man. And Henry Corrales just said, look, we're going to throw down. Sergio Pettis making his debut, another big name coming over from the UFC, against a guy in Alfred Kashakian who I don't think a lot of people probably know the name, and understandably so, but the guy is an absolute terror on the regional stage. He's come up to the big stage a couple times. He was on Dana White's Contender Series. He lost to Sean O'Malley. Oh, by the way, that guy's pretty good. He lost to Juan Archuleta out on the regional scene before. So,
he's pretty good, too.
He's not exactly. So he's lost to some top talent. And Kashakian said the Contender Series fight was an eye-opener. I talked to him briefly today, and he said, listen, man, I didn't do anything in my diet before. Like, I had no nutrition because I just ate fast food. He's like, I would cut like 20 pounds on the day I was weighing in. He's like, I've changed all that, man. It's going to be different. So, man, coming in against Sergio Pettis, Sergio's not getting just a gimme fight here, you know. So I'm intrigued by this one a lot. And then you round out the main card with the specialist. You got Raymond Daniels coming in. He of the just absolutely insane knockout facing Jason King. And then Emily King against Ava Knight, who I had not talked to Ava Knight before. Man, she is a pleasure to talk to.
She's such a nice young lady.
She's a sweetheart. Yeah. I enjoyed it. I will say this. I was like, what are the biggest lessons you learned? Now, of course, she is, if you don't know Ava Knight, a former professional boxing champion, which I didn't even know. I guess still, I don't know if she still has a title. Does she still have a title?
I don't know if she still has a
title.
But she boxed in between then. Yeah, she boxed like a couple months ago or a month and a half ago, something
like
that.
I didn't know that. She did her MMA debut, then she went and boxed, and now she's back doing MMA again. But it was funny. I was like, what lessons did you learn? You know, generic questions, but the standard stuff that you want to know. What did you learn out of that first MMA fight? She said, I learned that I never want to be on my back again. I'm like, well, okay.
Yeah.
That is a good lesson. I don't know if you're going to be able to execute it or not, but I kind of appreciate the honesty. I was like, well, is that really the – can you go in with that attitude? She's like, well, I'm not saying I'm not working on it. She's like, I'm working on what happens if I go to my back. She's like, but I know I don't want to be there. She's like, I like to stand and bang, and so my game is going to be suited around me finding a way to stand up. So, listen, this main card to me, I think is again, intriguing little storylines.
This is an excellent main card, and especially on those times when Bellator and the UFC go head-to-head, it is very important that Bellator put their best foot forward. And I think this is what they did here. They've put together an excellent card. I don't think there's one fight on this main card that isn't intriguing. And to top it off, I mean, they've got a couple of really intriguing fights on the prelims as well.
Well, I was going to say, and there were a couple fights that fell off this, so there would have even more low. But, yeah, so the prelims, I want to talk. First of all, Aaron Pico versus Daniel Carey. Aaron Pico, man, Aaron Pico was intense this week. You know, he knows what the storyline is. He gets it, man. He had back-to-back losses. You know, he's had some knockouts. He was the super kid, you know, that was supposed to be everything. And you know, I walked all the way up to the line of asking him this, and I didn't ask him it. And not that I was, I don't know. It just, I don't know how he would answer. But I wanted to ask him, like, is there any part of you that has ever thought, I wish I wasn't Aaron Pico. I wish I was Mike Smith from Iowa, who's just generic dude that came out and is working his way up the ranks. I mean, on the one hand, I mean, he's been paid very well to be 4-3 in his MMA career, so I'm sure he appreciates that financial opportunity. And not many people get the chance to capitalize on the spotlight, but man, the pressure that he's been under, the expectations that he's been under from day one. You know, I think it was ESPN. I think their headline was, "This is the greatest MMA prospect of all time." Man, that is hard. And man, you know, back-to-back losses on the prelims now. You know, wasn't invited to the tournament. Smartly so,
absolutely,
because
right.
You know, they said, "Hey, let's not do that to you. Let's let yourself get back on track." And by the way, Daniel Carey has beat a couple of prospects as well, and he was an interesting cat to talk to because he's like, "I don't know why they're giving me this dude because I'm going to knock him the fuck out again." Yeah. It was like no respect.
He's
no.
So matter of fact about everything. It was just like it was just a matter of just statement like, "Yeah, I'm just going to destroy him."
Yeah.
Man, that's all.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
So I'm intrigued. And like I said, Pico, I had heard that Pico really didn't want to talk to the media this week, and I get it. He was just like, "I don't know." But he did. He showed up to media day. And I thought he was just refreshingly honest, man. I was just like, you know, where did he say? He's like, "It sucks, man." He's like, "It sucks. It has been hard." He's like, "But what am I going to do? Am I going to give up?" He's like, "This is what I am. This is who I am. This is what I do, you know." And me feeling sorry for myself or me wondering what F or woe is me does nothing. He's like, "I just got to get back in and I got to work harder." And he said, "Listen, last time out, I had only been at Jackson Wink for a couple weeks. Now I've been there for 6-7 months. I feel that they've helped me a lot. I feel that they put a lot of attention to me." It was interesting. He's like, I love Albuquerque. You know, he's like, I've got horses that I can ride out my front door or whatever. Because I was like, "Man, I've been to Albuquerque. It's not as great as SoCal, right?" And he's like, "No, I love it out there. The people, the culture, all this." So I don't know, man. There was just like intensity about him. And I'm really excited to see it. And I know a lot of people just want to hate on him. But I think people should remember, man, this dude wasn't like in the spotlight going, "Look at me, guys. Look at me. I'm going to be the greatest ever." It was, you know, people in the know saw his wrestling background, his Golden Gloves
training
background.
Training with Freddie Roach and, you know, national wrestling teams and Pancration titles and
That's
whatnot.
That's it. There was hype around him, but he was never the guy out there going, "I'm the greatest MMA prospect of all time. Watch me do this." He just always said, "I'm going to work my ass off and be the best I can." And so I feel like a lot of people have turned on him and almost kind of want to see him fail. I don't know. In a lot of ways, I'm kind of interested in seeing if he can rebuild himself.
You know, I find it very difficult to talk about Aaron Pico without talking about just how mature and classy that guy is. You know, and we were there his loss. I know you were. I think you were there when he got knocked out by that.
I'm not
going
to commit to it. I don't know. Maybe I was just in the documentary.
But I know you were there for the Corrales fight.
Yep.
I definitely remember talking to you, Cage, out there. But but after that fight, it was so impressive that he suffered such a devastating knockout on such a big stage, and he made it a point, you know, fresh bruises and all, to put his suit on, get in front of the media, and give us heartfelt answers, looks you dead in the eye when he talks to you, and is just such an open book. So seeing him at the undercard media day yesterday, the first thing he says to me is, he's like, "Yeah, sorry, I normally wearing a suit, but I literally just got off the plane, and so, yeah, I got my tracksuit on." Like, dude, it's all good, man.
It's all good. All right.
You're a pro athlete. You can dress like this. But but he was – I think it's more so the pressure he puts on himself.
Yes.
And not the fan expectations. Because I know there have been trolls saying things about him and downplaying what he's had to go through in his journey as a mixed martial artist. But I see a lot of support for him. Mm-hmm. I see a lot of people just saying, "Hey, don't rush this guy. You know, don't put him through the ringer at his age,
right,
with his level of potential, what you can do with him if you just let him develop." What I found very intriguing was I think the last time he was before the media, now this is another time I know for sure you were there because we talked to each other, the Dominus MMA media day.
Yes.
And I think he had just signed with Ali's company. And I asked him something there, and he just about his time at Jackson Wink, and he sounded confident in his new coaching. When I asked him about it this time, he sounded 10 times more confident.
Yes.
And it's just this laser focus that he has. Now, I'm not saying that he's going to go out and just blow the doors off of Daniel Carey, because Daniel Carey has the right mentality into this. Man, he don't give a fuck about none of the fanfare or none of the hype around Pico. He just comes out to do his job.
Yep.
But this version of Pico, man, I'm excited.
I'm excited for it too, man. I'm excited to see what happens here. A couple of the names I just want to give you to look out for. J.J. Wilson, kid out of New Zealand, man. He's living in SoCal, training there now. Man, this kid is dangerous. 4-0, three of those in Bellator, all four stoppages, all in like 90 seconds or less. First time I've ever gotten to talk to this kid. He's a real pleasure to talk to. And it was funny, I kind of went up to him just joking. I was like, so what's the plan this week? I was like, 45 seconds, 60 seconds? I mean, he hasn't fought like a minute and a half yet. He's like, maybe we'll go a full minute this time. And I said, listen, man, I was like, let me ask you something. I mean, I was like, what is your mentality when you step in there? I mean, you've had all these quick finishes. I mean, you can't go in there assuming, like, I don't think anybody assumed Conor McGregor was going to get rid of Donald Cerrone in 40 seconds. I mean, you can't go in there thinking, you know, I'm going to get done with this dude in 45 seconds and go home. I was like, so what is the mentality when you go in there? He's like, my mentality when I go in there is that, like, I'm going to die or he's going to die, and I need to go home and see my family. I was like, oh. That is intense, my friend.
just you saying that right now just scared the shit out of me.
Right? I was like, dude, I love that. And he actually posted that quote on his Instagram. So if you want to check him out on his Instagram, I was like, this is lit. I'm going to figure out how to repost Instagram. I still don't know how to do that. I'm just learning Instagram. That's why I'm trying to start the Patreon, so I don't have to mess with that stuff. But I thought that was intense. But the kid has looked very, very talented. He hasn't fought long, but he's looked very, very talented. So that's a name, if you're not familiar with it, watch out for. Pay attention, Curtis Millender.
Yes.
Back in Bellator. You know what? I feel so bad I interviewed him. And I love Curtis, man. And he's such a fun guy to talk to, man. He's so knowledgeable. And I totally forgot he had fought for Bellator before. Just in my head, you know, I was like, I remember following him up the regional ranks. I remember him coming to USC. And so I feel like I screwed up my interview. That one, I'm just going to let the world know. I'm going to admit that. I forgot.
But Curtis seems like such a forgiving guy.
Oh, he didn't say it? No, he played around. You know, he didn't call me out. You know, I knew myself. I was like, man, you know, like, new home, welcome to your new home. He's like, yeah. Now, if I'd remembered, I'd been like, welcome back.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing. I'm like, you know, is there going to be nerves? You know, like, yeah, you came from the USC, but now you're in Bellator. Does it feel different? See, if I'd have remembered, I'd have been like, I mean, is it comfortable now that, I mean, you've been here? But I'm a dumbass, and I totally forgot. So I just want to admit that in front of the world. I totally forgot. And I felt that afterwards, I realized what I had done. Because at the very end of the view, he started talking about him and MVP, and he's like, fuck that guy. You know, and I was like, why would you? I was like, what? And then it still slowly started coming back to me, and I'm like, I'm such an idiot.
I was like, oh, got to pivot around.
Yeah. Such an idiot. We've all been there. Interview over. So that's one to watch. And the last one, I got to – and it's tough because Adele Altamimi, one of the stories of last year for Bellator, remember this kid that was in the military and had this horrible thing happen to him where he watched his friends get murdered.
Yeah,
right in front of him. Got a contract. Man, it was just such an emotional thing. But now he's fighting AJ Agazarm, who I just want to share this because AJ Agazarm, is an interesting character. If you know anything about AJ Agazarm, he's an interesting character, right? I had interviewed him one time before, and it was before his debut fight. And I walked up to him and ended up being his first interview of the day. Well, it turns out I was his first interview of the day on his first Fight Week interview ever. He had done interviews, but never Fight Week interviews, never here. And the interview was so awkward, and I was just like, this dude does not want to talk to me at all, one bit. But as soon as the interview was over, he was like, bro, can we take a picture together? And I was like, well, yes, we can take a picture together. I'm like, what's going on? So it was funny. So that was the last – I haven't been at his other fights. You know, he lost that first one, but he's come back and put together a couple wins, and now he's on a little bit of a winning streak. So I see him this week, and immediately he comes up, and he's like, bro, you did me dirty last time. He's like, you got me first, and I wasn't ready. And the whole time I thought this dude was kind of awkward and kind of weird. It turns out like he was just kind of nervous for an interview, you know. And we had a great interview this week. And he's actually now I think one of my favorite guys to talk to because he basically ends up busting my balls for the first half of it. So I wanted to play this real quick because it was a massive turnaround from our first interview. So what a difference a year makes. Here's AJ Agazarm.
Well, AJ, man, it's a full year in the sport now, man. So give me an idea. What's the biggest lessons, the surprises? I mean, what have you learned over this year?
I mean, I learned that I was watching the TV the other day, and I was watching the post-fight press conference, and I saw you in there. And I'm like, there's my dude. He's doing his thing. You get Dana, like, you get him going.
We try to. You got to get him riled up a little bit, you know?
Yeah, man, you do a good job.
I appreciate that.
Well, what about from your perspective, man? You're the one getting in the cage. I'm just out here just writing silly articles and stuff. So what's this past year been like for you?
But see, that's you think that's how people look at it? I don't look at it like that. It's everybody plays a part, and that's a big thing that makes this what it is, right? That's what makes, you know, this is Bellator in Los Angeles. It's a big event. So I look at the TV and I look at it and I see all these, I see all the moving parts when I watch a show, and I see the guys doing the different things, and that plays effect, you know, even the questions that I've been asked beforehand plays into what the interview I'm going to do with you and the interview that you give me plays into the way I'll carry myself for the rest of the weekend into the fight. And then after the fight, you're going to ask me some questions. You're like, I knew that. And I'm like, all right. But how long you been interviewing?
Man, I think I've been doing this for like 15 years.
So you're a black belt in interviewing?
A black belt in interviewing, man. I guess I could do that. First year was probably a little nerve-wracking, you know what I mean? You feel comfortable, but you don't know if you're saying something stupid that somebody's going to think you're an idiot.
Pretty much how I felt this last year.
You're a white belt in MMA. Coming in, is that what it's been like?
Coming in an MMA, a white belt. So I've been fortunate to have some red belts to look at, you know, look after, you know, look up to, and you know, it's been a journey.
It's interesting though. I mean, it's obvious like you see the whole game, as you said. I mean, you're talking about the role that we play. I mean, is that something that you've learned just within the past 12 months of really soaking in, understanding the industry, or were you studying it before you got in?
I think the dynamic of anything. You know, I come from a big family, so it's a pretty dynamic family, and there's always a lot of moving parts, just like anything else. So when you look at things more as a whole, and I try not to just individualize myself in the situation. There's a lot of fighters on this roster, and you guys, you looked at Bellator's schedule over the last couple months. They were in Japan, they were in Hawaii, they were all over the place, and this is just another show on their calendar. But I'm working to make this a special show, and that's why I work my tail off to really to give you guys something to report on, to give the fans something to watch, and give myself my best foot forward in everything I do.
Yeah, it's awesome. You've got a little momentum going right now for sure with the wins. But I do wonder, after that first loss, you know, I mean, haters were coming out, man. They were attacking you. I saw it. Was that difficult for you to have that be your first experience?
You know, now I had nothing to lose. You know, and now they're doing it. They're like, well, why is he still doing it? I'm like, well, I'm doing this for me. I'm doing this because this is what I've always wanted to do, and I'm living the American dream. I went to college, and instead of getting funneled into corporate America, I got funneled into becoming a fighter, because that's really my true calling, and I really want to, you know, be the best that I could possibly be in that. I'm just fortunate to have the guys and the people that I'm with and the team and the advisors that have been around me for as long as I've been living to put me in this position to really showcase what it means to be a black belt. And you know, like most jiu-jitsu guys out there, they get comfortable and they get their black belt and they're like, oh, I made it. Well, no, that's not a sign of making it. Like, you got your first camera, you're like, oh, I made it as a reporter. No,
right.
No, now you go use it. So that's where I'm at. It's just been it's been real interesting, especially the last year.
I bet. Could you have functioned in corporate America? What job role would you have been filling?
You know, I used to work at a bank.
Did you really?
Yeah, I have a degree in finance too. So
what were you doing there? Were you like putting accounts, digging loans together, or?
They had me doing all kinds of stuff. I was working primarily with credit cards, but yeah, it's a shift.
Sounds like a nightmare.
To say the least.
Sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah, but you know what we're always doing is we're always crunching numbers in bank and in finance. We're always crunching numbers, and that's what we're doing as athletes now. So it's a little bit easier. I know you guys are crunching numbers as well for the metrics that you got to reach. And I'm really excited when you guys, when you know those stats that they post after the fight. It's like, oh, he landed this amount of fights and he threw this amount or this, that, and the other. And it's just like, I'm really interested in that kind of stuff because I'm trying to refine it to be the best possible product that it could be given my talents, and I'm just a black belt.
I like it.
Let's talk about some of the stats here in this matchup. Adele, I think of him as a karate guy, but he's got a ton of submissions to his name as well. So have you studied his game? I mean, what do you think about him overall? If you want to take that phone call, go ahead.
Nate calling me. Nate, got to call you back.
I appreciate that. We'll just put him on hold just for a little bit. But what do you think about the guy? I mean, have you broken down his tape? Are you a guy that watches and studies and that sort of thing? Because, like I said, I kind of thought of him as a karate guy, but he does have so many submissions to his name.
Does he have – he has submissions? Yeah. I think he poses, like every fighter, they have their thing, they have their go-to things, and there's something to be said about when you turn the heat up a little bit and you put the sun right in their eyes and you get it as hot as possible. It's like, how good are you? So that's really what I'm going to do, is I'm going to start it with as hot as I possibly can and sustain that for the entire duration, till he either gives up or the final bell rings.
I like it. His first year started out rough. It's ended up successful for you. Lay out 2020. What's the plan? Is there a series of goals in place or a roadmap? What do you think you do this year?
Yeah, I wouldn't consider it a rough start. It was a start, but
fair enough.
You know, a start nonetheless. Yeah, but it I'm gunning for that world championship belt with Bellator. I think I have the best, maybe not now, but the best capacity to have that belt. And I'm not looking to just get it. I want to hold it for as long as I possibly can. I want to set records. But I'm not looking past this fight right now. And I'm really focused on making a statement, not only to my opponent, because it's going to be him and I out there, but to everyone else. You know, I come with a world of practitioners in the world of jiu-jitsu. So they're all looking, you know, whether they want me to win or they want me to lose, they're looking to see what my approach is and what my strategies are and things that I do in a fight. And, you know, you could say that's self-inflicted pressure, but it's pressure nonetheless. And, I'm really proud to have come from the background that I have and to have the team of guys that I'm with and to put it all on the line like this. I think that there's something that's going to happen big in 2020. And it starts with the Nick Diaz army.
All right, the Florida boy. I'm telling you, he's one of the boys now. I like him, man. I thought he was awkward, but he's all right. So, listen, I think this Bellator card has a lot of interesting fights on it, and I'm glad I'm here covering it, man. I think it's going to be a good one. But it is not the only fight. I hate when they go head-to-head. Yeah. I hate the fact that the UFC is on the exact same night. Now, if you're a hardcore MMA fan, there is a couple hours difference, so you will be able to kind of layer things out a little bit. I just like it better when, like, one is Friday, one is Saturday, because then you can watch everything. But UFC on ESPN Plus 24, Blaydes versus Dos Santos out there in Raleigh, North Carolina. Matt Erickson is out there, and a big main event, man. You said it a little bit earlier. Curtis Blaydes versus Junior Dos Santos. You know, big heavyweight fight for sure. And, again, you know, we were talking about matchups that have kind of meanings and positionings and where people are at in their careers. Curtis Blaydes and Junior Dos Santos, man, you know, this is intriguing to me because Curtis is that guy that, you know, he's had those rumblings. You know, this is the guy. And if Francis Ngannou didn't exist, he would be the guy. You know what Definitely. I mean? He'd be right there. And it is funny that Francis Ngannou has been his kryptonite, because I'm not saying Junior Dos Santos is a Francis Ngannou clone. They're definitely very different in their striking, but you're talking about a striking specialist, a very good striker in the heavyweight division. So interested to see if that, you know, kryptonite plays out a little bit. Meanwhile, Junior Dos Santos, former champ, of course, we know everything that he's accomplished, man. Just such an awesome human being, number one, but fantastic matchups and a great track record. But I feel like there's question marks around him. You know, is he still what he once was? And he's getting, you know, to face kind of that next generation right here. And it's an intriguing one to me.
I'm very, very interested in this fight. I'm kind of not sure what to think about it. No disrespect to either gentleman, but we're kind of seeing like the cast-offs of Francis Ngannou meet one another to try to see who gets another opportunity to kind of to right that wrong.
Right.
I'm leaning toward Curtis Blaydes in this one.
I am too. He's a big favorite. I didn't realize that. I was just checking the odds again. He's a big favorite.
How big of a favorite?
Minus 250.
Wow, that's
I mean, not massive, but it's still pretty damn big.
Yeah, especially given, you know, what JDS has accomplished in his career, man. And it's not like while I think Curtis Blaydes is probably going to be able to get a takedown, ground and pound him out, and get a TKO stoppage, taking down Junior Dos Santos is a lot easier said than done.
Yep.
So I don't think Blaydes is necessarily going to be able to hang with him primarily on the feet, but at the same time, Blaydes is still very new to MMA. So when you're that new to MMA and you're still fighting on that high of a level, like you're going to make these rapid improvements.
Yep.
And that's something we need to watch for. I mean, I guess what the closest person that we can liken JDS's style that Blaydes has faced before, maybe Overeem.
Makes some sense.
Maybe. I'll go on a limb with that one. We saw how that played out.
Yep.
I think Curtis Blaydes might be able to buy himself some new life atop of the heavyweight division.
I'm intrigued, man. You look through JDS's recent track record. As you said, Nagano lost that fight. I mean, you know, complications there, whatever, but lost that fight. And he's had the injury since. You know what I mean? He's had all the infection and all that stuff. I'm kind of curious about that. You know, how did that impact him? Then you go back. You know, wins over Derek Lewis, wins over Tai Tuivasa. No disrespect. Love both those guys. Fun to watch. Fun to talk to. But not elite level competitors. I don't think either one of those. You know, you don't look at him and go, definite future champion. You know, that's somebody that's going to be right there. The win over Blagoy Ivanov.
That was an impressive one.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, that
means something.
That means something, and that's a tough dude. But again, not somebody that you're like,
right? Not okay. This could be a champion.
Yeah,
right here. That does, yeah.
So I don't know. I'm curious because, listen, I'm not trying to count JDS out, man. 35 years old, again, one of the nicest dudes in the sport, man. He's up there singing Purple Rain in front of the media the other day, having fun. I mean, I love this guy, but there's question marks. That's what I'm saying. I'm not counting the guy out. What I'm saying is there's question marks. That's what I like to see when I go in, what's going to get answered. You know what I mean? And that's what I feel like is does he still belong in this elite-level competition? You know what I mean? Or is Blaydes this guy that we thought he was? Man, I'm excited by this one.
Yeah, I'm leaning toward Blaydes being the guy we thought he was. I mean, I don't think that's really putting down JDS at all.
Right,
I think Blaydes is really just that good.
Right.
Like you said, a world without Francis Ngannou, Curtis Blaydes is the guy.
Yep.
So, yeah, I think he's going to show that Saturday.
I'm intrigued by that one. The other one I'm really intrigued by, man, Michael Chiesa versus Rafael Dos Anjos.
Yes,
man.
Please, may I have another?
That's it. Yes. I'm very intrigued by the main event, so I'm not trying to write it off, man. I'm not. But to me, this one has just as much intrigue, if not more, man. I love it, man. And I don't know what to think of it, man, because Chiesa at 170 pounds, definitely the right move. No question about it. Definitely the right move. And again, I think RDA, one of these guys that we're having question marks about, like, exactly where he stands, right? I mean, the guy has shown that he can fight the very best of the best and obviously former champ as well, you know, similar position. I mean, Kies, I don't know that I'd say is in a similar position to Curtis Blaydes, but maybe so, you know, and the fact that he's coming up to a new division and it does seem like this is the right place for him to be in. So a lot of similar storylines, I guess, to these top two fights, and I'm excited by this one as well. And by the way, Here it's the other way around. Rafael Dos Anjos, the established veteran, the big favorite at -260.
That makes sense to me. I wouldn't put the line that far apart, but it makes sense to me that Dos Anjos is the favorite, and mainly because Chiesa, this is his first real test at welterweight.
Yes, it is. It is. That is fair to say.
Yeah, with all due respect to Carlos Condit and Diego Sanchez, who are both absolute, you know, pioneers, vets, legends in the game, They are diminished versions of themselves.
That is it's hard. Like I said, you don't want to sound disrespectful because those guys are legends, but it's 2020.
Right, and especially hurts my heart to say that about those two in particular.
Yes.
Because Carlos Condit was a big part of my fandom before becoming a media member.
That's great.
And Diego Sanchez it's been one of my more, you know, pleasant interviews.
Oh, he's the best.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's going to go long. You're not going to get a short interview.
Oh, it's going to be, yeah.
You're going to be there. Post up. Bring lunch.
Have a Snickers bar. Yeah.
But he's so great, man. And it is, dude, it is great. I mean, listen, I don't know what he's doing with the crystals and the whatever else he's got going on. But that dude really does look like he's getting younger.
He does. He's
it's scary.
He is a very scary man.
All right, we'll get to him later. Yeah. He's got a fight coming up. We'll deal with that. But yes, no, you're right. I guess that's what I think is rightly. Chiesa does look so much better at 170 pounds. Like, it's ridiculous that he was making 155, man. And he's a huge dude. He's in the right weight class now. But now we find out for real. Like, are you just another guy here? Or are you, you know, a guy that we need to pay attention to?
Yeah, that's a big question that we need to ask about Michael Chiesa. And he's a guy who came so close to being one of those guys at 155, which is a hyper-competitive division. And with a win over RDA, he automatically becomes one of those guys at 170. I mean, look at the guys who have previously beaten Rafael Dos Anjos at 170. You got Kamaru Usman, the current champion, Colby Covington, who the recently dethroned People's Champion, and you got Leon Edwards, who should be fighting for a belt.
That's it. Yeah, if we were just doing it off merit alone, right, not necessarily what your star power is, and I think Edwards should be right there. So, yeah, you're absolutely talking about the best in the division. And that's always tough, too, man, when you're talking about a guy that has losses against the very best, because – I mean, if you lose the very best, that doesn't mean you're close to the very best. But at the same time, like, if you're only losing to the very best, like, don't downplay him that much. You know what I mean? Like, what do those losses really mean?
It's so, levels to this.
That's it.
Yeah, and we do know that Rafael Dos Anjos' level is above a lot of others. And Michael Chiesa, we still have question marks about him at welterweight, despite the fact that he physically looks a ton better.
Yep.
He's a massive guy. I don't know how the hell he made 155.
Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, and when he talks about it, I've talked to him a couple of times since the move up in weight class, and he's like, I don't know what the hell I was thinking. He's like, I have no clue.
Well, at least he admits it. All right, listen, Matt Erickson is out there, and luckily, you know, since we can lean on the MMA Junkie resources, I figured, hey, a few minutes with Michael Chiesa, you know, you'd want to hear a little bit about that as well. So here he is speaking with Matt Erickson out there in North Carolina.
About a year into this welterweight experiment?
Yeah.
How's it feeling, man? I mean, it's got to feel great about this time of week.
Yeah, it's really not an experiment anymore, man. This is where I'm here to stay. I mean, I'm too big at lightweight. I mean, it was getting to the point where it was borderline comical. You know what I mean? I go back and watch film, and I'm like, it's not my weight class anymore. I mean, I had a really good run there. I beat a lot of good guys. But this is my new weight class. This is where I feel best. You know, and I'm here to become world champion. I feel like this is the toughest weight class in the UFC, but when it comes down to giving myself the best shot at becoming a world champion, this is where I have to do it. I mean, I was really handicapping myself fighting at lightweight, and I feel good here. I feel right. RDA probably feels the same as I do. You know what I mean? He made the jump a long time ago. He got himself into a title fight. So, this is the right weight class for me.
Was this the point of the week before that you were probably feeling the worst? Was that Wednesday and early Thursday when you had 15 more to go?
No, it was like 4 weeks into training camp. I felt the worst. You know what I mean? It's for me, like right now, my weight is I'm probably about 85 water loaded. You know, and I had to work hard to get here. You know, I'm a big guy. I'm 200 pounds outside of camp. So you can only imagine what I got to do to get to lightweight. You know, and the biggest thing is I quit focusing on my skills, and I was just focusing on the weight cut. So, you know, I'd go to practice, and I'm really not even paying attention to what my coach is telling me to do, the game planning, all the fight-specific training. I'm like, it's in one ear and out the other, because all I can think about is my weight. So it's nice to be able to focus on my skills, and it's nice to feel good, man. Like, it's cool to be at fight week and want to engage with my fans and have a good open workout, crack a good sweat. Like, I used to really have to drag my feet through these things, so it's making this whole experience as a whole better.
Was there a better 1-2 punch to start out at 170 than what you were able to do so far? And then, you know, where does RDA kind of fit into that mix? To be able to have three wins in a row at 170 over the guys you then have wins over would be pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, this is the toughest one. I mean, out of anybody I fought in the UFC, this is the stiffest test I've fought to date. Like, you know, it's. I mean, the proof's in the pudding. I mean, the guy's former world champion, fought for a belt at 170, and he's still very relevant. You know, he's a guy, I mean, he beat Kevin Lee, and Kevin Lee is like 7 years younger than him. So it's like, for him to be at the age he's at and still beating these young guys, it's like, this is, I feel like the toughest guys to compete against are the guys that are at the veteran status, that have seen it all and are in like their mid-30s. Like, they're still in their groove. Like, this is a guy that's still in his groove, you know, but I got to go out there and derail him. So I'm really excited for the opportunity to compete against him, but, you know, I got to get my hand raised on Saturday night.
What has been your impression being here in Raleigh, and what does it do for the sport to have UFC here?
I love being here in Raleigh. You know, it's it's cool to come to these cities that haven't had the exposure to the UFC yet, because it's everybody wants to come see the spectacle, you know what I mean? And it's an honor to be one of the people to put on, I mean, I'm co-main event, so it's like I'm on the poster, you know, I'm around town, you know, there's a buzz, it's good to be here, you know, and it's cool to have like a good connection. There's a guy who's a wrestling coach at NC State, Adam Hall, and I grew up watching him wrestle on the same circuit where I'm from in Washington, so it's like they welcomed us in open arms. So I've been at NC State College using their training room, getting some practices in, watching those guys, and you know, I went to the game last night, went to the hockey game. It's just a good hometown feel. I love fighting in Las Vegas, but I love just as much to come to places like Raleigh, North Carolina, and get to share this experience with you guys.
Not that the names that you were fighting, you know, 4 or 5 years ago were bad names by any stretch, but the names you're fighting now, does that give you that kind of satisfaction that what you were trying to attain when you were on The Ultimate Fighter, you reached that level?
Oh, yeah.
Now you're there with those guys. Now, you're not just a guy who's fighting those names. You're one of those names.
Yeah, it's crazy. I'll be 8 years I've been in the UFC this March. So it's like I guess I've achieved that veteran status. But it's nice to be in this fight with RDA and still feel like the up-and-comer. Like, I feel like the up-and-comer. I'm going up against the veteran. I'm going up against the guy who's a former world champion, you know. In my last, let's see, since Kevin Lee, who he fought for a belt after we fought, Anthony Pettis, former world champion, Carlos Condit, former world champion, Diego Sanchez, former contender, fought for a belt. You know, this is my fifth champion. This is the fifth guy that I've fought in a row that's been in a title fight or has been a champion. So these are the fights I want. And that's how you become a champion, man. I gotta beat these guys, and you know it's a lot easier. It sounds a lot easier than it is. You know what I mean? So it's an honor.
Can you break him down real quick for us? I mean, obviously we know he's good on the ground, but we know, I mean, the majority of your wins are there as well. So.
Well, I'll break it down for you real simple. He's got really good stand up. He's got a hard leg kick. He's got great takedown defense. He's got good submissions. Got my work cut out for me.
Notice you. Did nothing but chili peppers up there.
Yeah.
You and I have had these Pearl Jam discussions.
Yeah.
I'd be remiss to not ask if you'd heard the new single.
I have not yet, but I did see that they released it on Twitter. So, yeah, I'm excited for it. Yeah. This little PJ sounds good.
What's your game plan on Saturday? Everything you just mentioned.
Yeah.
How do you plan to counter that? How do you plan to continue to rise against the welterweight ranks?
Well, I can't reveal too much, but, you know, for as well-rounded and complete as a fighter as he is, there's obviously everybody's got holes in their game. Nobody's perfect, you know what I mean? Everybody's got holes that can be exploited by, you know, another man. So there's some things that we're going to look to capitalize on. But, you know, I'm expecting a three-round fight. I'm expecting to be in there for 15 minutes. I'm expecting to, at some point, have maybe be on the bad end of some exchanges, but I'm also expecting to be on the good end of some exchanges. And that goes for the ground, that goes for the wrestling, that goes for everything, you know what I mean? So it's going to be a back-and-forth fight, but, you know, I'm very confident I'm going to get my hand raised.
As you would expect, Michael Chiesa feeling good at 170 pounds. I just want to get right into it. Hannah Cyphers versus Angela Hill is on the main card as well. I just want to go straight to this interview as well, because I shared one interview with AJ Agazarm just because, like, I like the guy and he's unique and he's a character. Hannah Cyphers is so incredibly unique. And Matt Erickson sat down with her one-on-one. And it's so funny because you almost should go to YouTube and check out the video. If you've never seen this girl, I mean, she's tough as nails. She fights her ass off. She is petrified of cameras and microphones. And, I mean, I'm not talking about a little bit nervous. You know what I mean? Like, when you were in high school worried about giving a speech, you were, like, a little bit nervous about if you could get up there. This girl who fights in a cage for a living, like, trembles in fear when it has happened. It's so unique. And I was so happy that Matt sat down with her. So I just wanted to share this few minutes as well. It's not long, and it's mostly Matt, but I figure it deserved to be shared. This is Hannah Cyphers.
How does this one feel for you? This is like this is a home game.
Yeah, this is pretty nice not to have to travel.
Did you, when you knew this card was coming here, did you say, hey, I want to be on this show 100% for sure, get me on it?
I inquired about getting on it because I thought it would be nice to get to fight close to home.
I mean, when you have to travel, what does that throw your preparation off during a fight week? Or because you've had to travel more lately, are you just used to that part of it?
I guess not so much. It's just a lot more convenient. I'm not super big on flying, but
So it's nice to be able to just get in the car and just drive down here this
yes,
week.
Yes, sir. It's really nice.
What do you think about like friends and family and stuff like that that are going to be able to see you fight? I mean, I pulled in here today to the hotel, and the vehicle that I parked next to has a Hannah Cypher's MMA sticker on the back of it. I'm assuming, is that yours?
Thanks, my mom.
There you go. I mean, she's right there, so this is super easy for everybody.
Yeah, my family and my friends were really excited that I was going to be close enough where they could come.
How much are you getting hit up for tickets and stuff like that? Is it constant?
Not too bad.
Talk to me a little bit about maybe the expectations that you'll have on Saturday night when you make that walk out, when they announce your name, you hear the fans kind of go crazy. I mean, do you think about that kind of thing and what kind of a boost that might give you right before the bell rings?
I don't know. I try not to think too much about the crowd and just focus on the fight itself.
Yeah. Speaking of the fight, talk to me a little bit about Angela and what she brings to the table. I know that's not who your original opponent was, and she's kind of got this reputation now of stepping up for girls who fall out of fights. What does she bring to the table? Where is she dangerous?
I don't really know. She brings a lot of experience. You can never like count that out. It makes matter so much in a fight. And she's a really skilled striker. You know, that's mainly where she shines. It's on the feet. It's gonna be pretty fun.
Do you think that there is anything about your game that maybe she has overlooked? I mean, she's had a little bit less time to prepare for you than if she would have had a full fight game. Where are you great that she might not realize that you're great at?
I don't know. I've been working a lot of areas in my game. I'm trying to like smooth out some of the spots where I have in it and just getting better.
Are you a film watcher? Do you go back and watch your opponent's previous fights? Or is that something you leave up to the coaches?
I do a little bit, mostly my coaches.
What did you see, if anything? I mean, I guess the fight, one fight in particular, you guys have a common opponent in Jodi Escobar. So did you look back at that fight to see what she did against her compared to what you did against her?
I have watched it. You shouldn't generally watch like all the UFC fights as they come through, especially with the girls. So, a little bit.
Now that we're starting off a new year, we're still a few weeks into the new year, did you set any goals for this year in terms of your fight, your fight career? I mean, do you want to have a certain number of fights this year? Is there a certain spot you want to be in the rankings by the end of the year? Or are you just a one fight at a time kind of girl?
I do really hard on myself and like set goals, but I also, as far as fighting, just like take it more one fight at a time. Like I'm focused on this fight. But since it is early in the year, I would like to be able to fight a couple more times this year.
Be able
year.
To get a few, string a few together and then, I mean, you got to string a few together to say that you're in that title picture, right?
Yes.
Is that the ultimate goal for you?
I would like to be good, yeah. I mean, good enough to get the title, but see how it goes.
If you had a picture in your head of the ideal way that you'd like to have things go on Saturday night, knowing you're this close to friends and family, you're this close to home, what's that ideal way to get it done? Mm. Is it being on a highlight reel? Is it some kind of an awesome finish?
Probably would make my family and stuff back home happy, but let's see.
All right, so there you go. Hannah Cypher's, mostly Matt Erickson, but also Hannah Cypher's. It's funny because the only other person I know that is that scared of speaking is Jonathan Martinez. He fights in Houston, actually, in a couple weeks. And I was putting in my interview request with the UFC, and he's down on the prelims, but I like the kid. I mean, I think he's got skills, but he's down on the prelims. And there was a part of me that really wanted to schedule a one-on-one, like, just to mess with him because, like, he hates it so much. Like, he's so scared of talking. Like, I might just try to pull him aside. Probably if I put it on paper for him, he'll get scared when it's on his schedule. He doesn't want to do it. Listen, to be honest, this fight card, I don't want to disrespect it at all, but, I mean, you know, neither of us are in as deep. But I did want to pick out a couple things that stand out to me, and I want to let you do the same. Arnold Allen versus Nick Lentz, I think that's a quality fight there. That's not Arnold Allen's original opponent, but, you know, Nick Lentz stepping in, the grizzled veteran there. man, I think that's a big test for Arnold Allen, who's looked impressive so far. Justine Kish versus Lucy Pudilova, I just think that could be a scrap. And Lena Landsberg versus Sarah McMahon, you know, seeing Sarah McMahon come back after pregnancy and taking a break and that sort of thing, it'll be interesting to see where she's at. But I think the hardcores, Brett Johns versus Tony Gravely, I think that is going to be a phenomenal fight, man. I really like Tony Gravely and I really like Brett Johns, so keep your eye on that one. And Herbert Burns versus Nate Landwehr. Herbert Burns, obviously the brother of Gilbert Burns, but Nate has been fighting under the M1 banner, and that dude is an absolute character. So he could be a lot of fun. He's skilled as well, but he's an absolute character. So if you weren't planning on tuning in early for the prelims, maybe check out a couple of those early prelims. I'll admit, some of the middle of this card gets a little meh to me. And again, no disrespect to anybody that's on it, but as far as, you know, and again, it is, I will say this, when you're on site and you're talking to people and it gets a little bit more intriguing to me. So I don't mean to disrespect anybody here, but if for my money, start early, watch those first, you know, two or three fights, and then maybe then you start bouncing around. And, you know, if you're lucky enough to have two setups, you know, you watch both events at the same time. But what about you? Main card, prelim card? I mean, we talked about those top two fights that I think we're both intrigued by. Anything else here that you're most looking forward to?
I'm definitely – I mean, you covered the Hannah Cyphers and Angela Hill fight. At least one side of it.
Yeah.
I'll just represent a little bit of the Angela Hill side, only because I stand for her.
Right.
Because we are from the same place. Also a native of Prince George's County, Maryland.
I didn't realize that. Okay, yeah, nice.
Yeah, so got a rep for the hometown. So I'll just go ahead, just put my journalist hat just in my pocket for just a second.
Hey, look, I'll be honest with you. Every time there's Texas MMA fighters, I mean, Fortis MMA representing Dallas, you know, I just admit it. You know what I mean? I want to see him do good. I want to see my hometown represent.
Now, forgive me while I pull my general's hat back out of my pocket and put it back on. I'm gonna highlight one that probably people would not expect. I'll say Bevan Lewis versus Daquan Townsend.
It's a good fight.
Yeah, Daquan Townsend, it seems like a guy who kind of gets into chaotic fights. Bevan Lewis, his last fight was at Darren Stewart,
mm-hmm.
that ended up being one of the least aesthetically pleasing fights of 2019.
Thought it was going to be a lot better than it was, that's
right.
For sure.
I wonder if that last result is going to put a fire up under him. Because we were talking about the same guy who got in a firefight with Uriah Hall and was just that close to,
yep.
to winning a dominant decision. So I'm very curious what those two are going to collide. Like, that could be a sleeper pick on this one.
I dig it. Man, listen, it's two fights. And again, I wish they weren't going at the same time. There's a couple hours separation, but there's going to be a lot of overlap between these two cards. But I will say, if you're an MMA fan, I think between these two cards, man, I think there's going to be plenty of good fights, plenty of good action, and plenty of good storylines. So, all right, listen, one quick thing about you, just so you know. So, no longer with SureDog.com. By the way, I saw somebody roasting you, trying to talk shit the other day on Twitter. First of all, you put them down as you –
Well, thank you.
As we expected.
Hashtag clapback cartel.
Yeah, you do. but I will say, weird thing, right here in California, you basically lost your job because of a damn law that had nothing to do with MMA or journalism or whatever.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's a law that was made to protect Uber and Lyft drivers and give them, like, employee benefits. And somebody thought it was a good idea to expand this to freelance writers. Now, granted, freelance journalism and freelance writers do get exploited a lot. And that's a very real thing. But the way they handled that wasn't quite productive because it led to a lot of people just losing their jobs. And SureDog's parent company just looked at the number of California contributors they had and thought maybe they can do things without them. So they just cut everybody in California, myself included, despite, you know, I did a lot of work for SureDog. And, you know, much love to Mike Fridley, my boss there, and Ben Duffy, Jay Petrie, Jason Burgos, like all the people that I work with very closely there, absolute love and respect to them, and I appreciated my time there. But, you know, hey, things happen, so got to keep it trucking, baby.
It sucks. Like I said, man, you found a new home at Miami MMA News, and that's good. Wish you guys the best there, obviously up and coming. Just obviously SureDog, one of the established brands,
right.
You know what I mean? Legends of the sport, so to speak. So it's a shame that couldn't work out, and it's a shame that it didn't have anything to do with your performance or anything like that. It's literally just dumb loss.
Yeah, just a politician that decided that 35 entries per contributor a year would be sufficient for an independent contractor as
that's
a writer.
Insane.
Yeah, that's super trash. Like I can do like 12 entries. If you leave me alone at a media day, I've turned in like 12 to 15 pieces of content in one day. Like that's
be one thing
standard.
If you were like a magazine writer writing like cover pieces or something. Like, you know what I mean?
like dude, I'm out there in these streets, man. I'm trying to get these, you know, I'm at the media day. I'm trying to talk to everybody and get some good content. But it's all good. Like it's my journey in mixed martial arts media has been such a thrill ride. It still is now. Like I'm sitting here across from one of my role models in this game and sharing beers.
I'm looking around the room, man. There might be somebody else behind me. Somebody snuck in on me.
Hey, so I love this shit, man. I love it, man. So whatever's next. Hey, the DMs are open. So like I'm willing to get some work in, man. I got a little man to feed, and he's saying, "Daddy, you better start interviewing some people. You better start getting this work because diapers aren't cheap."
That's it, man. So Ant Walker MMA, hit him up there. All right, listen, I teased some news about Cold Coffee. We've been talking for a couple weeks about what's going on, and it's been a rough one behind the scenes. I'll just level it out there and be honest with you. I know he would have been here and share it with us here, but he's back home in Vegas, and I thought the only right thing to do, I talked to him about it earlier and asked him how he wanted to handle things, and he actually wanted to speak to everybody in his own words and share a little bit of what's going on. So, no real easy way to segue to it, but here's Cold Coffee.
Well, hello, everybody. Sorry I haven't had a chance to be around on these last couple ones. Just crazy work, but you know, as well, dealing with some stuff. But before you get too excited, no, I'm not dying or anything like that, but I am dealing with some shit. I guess, how do I set it up? I started noticing months back, I was getting like numbness in some of my feet, one of my foot, and then eventually started progressing, and then numbness in the leg as it was starting to move up. You know, when it started with issues, you know, and of course your doctors wants to say, oh, you know, you're overweight, you know, this is going on and you should lose weight and you should do this, this, this. And, you know, but something inside you's like, something else is going on. I know something else is going on, but okay, you're right. I'll try to lose some weight. I'll try to do this, you know, and then you go through the day and you start noticing that, you know, things are getting harder to do, you know, moving around and carrying a lot of gear and a lot of that stuff, you know, your normal back pains just kind of feel a little more amplified. Long story short, you know, after sort of trying to treat that forever, finally doctors come to the conclusion I probably have sort of a pinched nerve or something with my in the spine, like a spinal stenosis. So they thought there was like an enlarging of the spinal columns that was causing some issues that could cause some of the numbness of the legs and the other stuff. So they're like, hey, well, let's just go get some MRIs and, you know, see what we can see there. See, I'm sure it's the stenosis thing. But luckily enough, I suppose, by doing this, the MRIs, we found a good size mass or a tumor that is actually surrounding one of my, it's sort of working its way through my spinal column. And it is actually crushing my spinal column in a section there that is the reason why I'm getting a lot of this numbness of the legs. It's hard to stand sometimes. Sometimes the ability to walk kind of is really weird. And when you start losing that function, you really start to freak out a little bit. You know, you kind of take all that stuff sort of for granted. The ability to get up out of your bed easy and to move around and all the other kind of stuff. So, everything looks like it is a benign tumor. That is good. Does not look to present itself that is cancer or anything along those lines. So that's wonderful. Again, we won't know for sure until we get it out, until they could test it. But that is actually going to take place next Friday morning on the 31st. So I will probably spend the time of when most of you cool people will be watching the Super Bowl. I'm going to be recovering. I'm not going to say hopefully, like I always have been saying recently, because I'm a sick bastard. I will be recovering in the hospital. So hopefully I will be able to watch the game. I'm not sure how that it's all going to work, but We're going to make that work. But the surgery is going to involve two surgeons because, luckily enough, my tumor is super, just like I am. And so rather than just presenting itself in the spine area so that the spinal surgeon can get to it, it actually is protruding into the chest cavity. So I'm also going to have a thoracic surgeon get in there as well. So lucky me, for the low price of some number I don't even want to think about, I'm going to have two surgeons do a back-to-back surgery. At one point, they talked about trying to do tandem stuff, but whatever. I feel like I'm getting way too much into the details. But that's kind of what's been going on. You know, dealing with all that stuff. And the guys at Junkie have been really good, kind of help covering some of the events that normally I would have to, especially the last couple of weeks. You know, I've had to get pulled off of event stuff to go do various testing and stuff. And it's been rough, but I appreciate all my brothers there at MMA Junkie for helping out. And I appreciate you guys that have sent the good thoughts and vibes. And I'm not a big praying man myself, but I respect and appreciate all you out there that are. So I would be more than happy to accept all your prayers and thoughts and good vibes and all that other stuff that's going to be going for, that will be hopefully be coming to me on next Friday. And if you could send some good thoughts to my surgeons, you know, send good vibes their way. I'm hoping they're going to do the best work, and then I'll be back out on the road after some recovery time, you know, and some rehab time, you know, just kind of getting everything back in order. But I'm looking forward to moving around a lot easier, you know, and getting to hopefully enjoy a lot of that stuff that we take for granted, you know, shit, just moving, exercising, go hiking, walking, all that other good stuff. You know, there's nothing like, you know, facing your sort of mortality that kind of throws it back in your face, you know. And I've been lucky, and I feel like I'm getting all morbid to say I've had a good life, but I have had a good life. I've worked my ass off to get where I am, and I've enjoyed every bit of the ups and the downs, the traveling the world, doing all the other good stuff. And I hope to get back to that sooner rather than later. So that's it, kind of in a nutshell. So, you know, I apologize if I've been a grumpier asshole than later. I did read that this tumor can cause personality changes. I was hoping it would make me a much shinier, happier person. maybe that's still to come. So, yeah. So there it is. I appreciate you all. Thanks for the patience. Thank you, John, for having doing the show so much on your own. I appreciate you guys backing me up there at Junkie, and I'll give you guys another update. I won't be on the show next Thursday. I don't imagine I'll be prepping for surgery, but you never know. You never know. But so I just wanted to get that out there and share that with you guys. I feel bad that, you know, I've kind of kept it just kind of close to the cuff. But now that it's getting to that point, you know, it's no sense just keeping it quiet. You know, I'd rather just get it out there. So thank you all very much for listening to The Roadshow, and for your continuing listening to The Roadshow, and for many, many more years. I look forward to doing this. So thank you all, and let's get back to some, like, lighthearted shit, you know, like dudes and women fighting and beating the shit out of each other. So thanks all for listening. Hope I didn't bore you too bad. Take care.
All right, so there you have it, straight from Cole Coffey's mouth. Not the easiest time for him. So as we said before, man, please keep your thoughts with him. I don't know if you're religious types or whatever else, but whatever you can do to send some positive energy his way. I know he's a little bit nervous. The show will go on, and we will continue to make things happen. He will be a part of it, and it'll only be a brief pause on the sidelines for him, and then he'll be right back in the mix like he always was. Yeah, hate to go out on kind of a sad note, but maybe it won't be sad. It'll just be positive, and things will look good moving forward. We'll hope for the best for him, and we know things will turn around quickly. In the meantime, thanks for listening.